From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now here's your host, Mark Kapler.
As the baby boom generation begins to reach retirement age, California's senior population will begin to see significant growth. By 2030, the over 65 population will grow by 4 million people, and it will become a more racially and ethnically diverse population, with many living alone. And that has significant implications for the types of senior support services that will be needed in the future. Recently, the nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California issued a report, Planning for California's Growing Senior Population, that discussed those implications, including the need for more nursing care and assisted living facilities, as well as the need for more healthcare professionals, especially those who provide home and community-based services for seniors. We'll hear from one of the lead authors of the report, Laurel Beck, policy analyst with the Public Policy Institute of California. The Senior Boom, preparing for the baby boom aftershock.
We'll also hear from Jeremy Oliver, program director for the Kern County Office of Aging and Adult Services, and Fresno State gerontology professor Helen Miltiades.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world, and by Kaiser Permanente. Thrive from the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute. It's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kapler.
The nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California recently issued a report entitled Planning for California's Growing Senior Population. Our guest, Laurel Beck, is one of the authors of that report. Laurel is an expert in health policy and the policy challenges relating to aging populations and just happens to be an alum of my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin. So welcome.
Thank you.
How much has California's senior population, how much is it going to grow in the next 10 or 15 years?
So our report is based on Department of Finance projections, and we show an increase of 87% by the year 2030. And we focus on that year because that's when the last segment of the baby boomers will reach retirement age. And to put that in perspective, in 2012, there were 4.6 million Californians that were over age 65. And by that number, it will be, or by that year, excuse me, it will be 8.6 million.
Yeah, it's 87%, or in other words, it almost doubles.
It almost doubles, yeah. 4 million more seniors.
Wow. All kinds of opportunities and situations to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a little closer look at the elderly and how the senior population is changing in California. How is it changing ethnically?
The change in the racial ethnic composition is going to be significant. The numbers of seniors in each racial ethnic group is going to grow, but some race ethnic groups are going to grow faster than others. In particular, we're going to see the fastest rates of growth among the Latino and the Asian Pacific Islander populations. So one example is that in 2012, an estimated 18% of seniors in California were Latino. And in 2030, that share is projected to grow up to 26%.
No, quite a substantial
yes.
increase. So what about males and females? They say that females live longer than males. Are we going to see a large female population?
Actually, we think that it's going to go in the other direction.
Really?
We're expecting to see a slight uptick in the number of males as a proportion of the population, and that's kind of because of some gains we've made in life expectancy on certain health conditions. There's a lot of reasons for it. But based on our number, Department of Finance numbers, we think that the share of males in the population is going to go from about 44% in 2012 to about 45.5%. And that sounds small, but it's actually pretty significant in terms of in these kind of demographic projections.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, actually. So let's talk about family structures, this idea of single and divorced versus married, or on the other hand, having children versus not having children. How many California's seniors are going to change in that regard? How is it going to change?
It's going to change a lot, we think, actually. Based on survey data, we looked at previous trends, and when you think about it, in the 1970s and 1980s, we saw shifts away from sort of traditional mom, dad, and two kids family structure. People were less likely to get married starting around that time. They were less likely to have kids. And those people are now reaching senior age. So we're anticipating seeing seniors that are more likely to have never been married, they're more likely to be divorced, and they're more likely not to have children.
But if they're never been married, they could be with someone and just not married.
That's true. And that's absolutely true, that we may not be picking up on specifics like if you're cohabiting versus being...
Happened like, a lot in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. So we may be overstating that. But in terms of the number of people in surveys who report that they've never been married, there's going to be a pretty significant uptick. And we think that the number of people who have never had any children is actually going to go up significantly. So one statistic we cite in the paper is that in 2012, 12% of 75-year-old women had no children. And by 2030, we project that that number is going to be 20%. So one in five women are going to not have children, which is a pretty significant part of the population.
That's a big jump. Mm-hmm. Again, almost another one of these doubling of the percentages. So the composition of this of seniors in California in 2030, very different than historically has been the case.
Absolutely. We think that along a number of dimensions, our report focuses on the demographics, but in a lot of ways, seniors in 2030, seniors looking forward, are going to look pretty different than they have in the past.
Now, I want to ask a little bit. It really wasn't addressed in your report, but it's still a very important issue, I think, though, for seniors, and that is fewer workers getting traditional pension plans, more and more getting this 401k option. And the problem is that even those that get the 401k option, a lot of times they don't really use it, and they're putting away too much to little money. What are your thoughts on the economic situation of California seniors going forward?
So I think one important point is that income and wealth are harder to predict than demographics. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that depends on how the overall economy does, how the housing market does, how financial markets do. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little less able to make kind of hard predictions about that. I do think that your point is absolutely taken. People with defined benefit pensions had more predictable income streams.
Which is the traditional pension.
Yes. Versus a shift to 401ks. And you do see lower take-up of 401ks than you saw of defined benefit type plans. So I think that there is reason to worry, there always has been, but maybe more going forward, that people are not saving enough, that they are not going to have enough resources to support them in the way that they are hoping to continue living as they age.
Okay, well, thank you for that description of the key demographic trends in California's emerging senior population. So what are the implications of those trends? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Our guest is Laurel Beck, a co-author of a PPIC report entitled Planning for California's Growing Senior Population. So you stated in your report that California's senior population is going to grow substantially in the next 10 to 15 years. But what are the implications of that?
I think that the growing senior population has implications for a lot of policy areas. Basically, any policy that affects people is going to be affected by a growing senior population. In this particular report, we focus on what that growth means for the demand for support in daily activities and what the state will need to do to anticipate the need for facilities and health workers.
Yeah.
But it really just think of a policy area and more seniors.
Yeah, and you're thinking, I'm going to talk more about this later, but I'm sure in terms of living in place and all the health workers that are going to be required to make that happen, because as you get older, you're going to need some assistance, particularly if you're not married and or don't have children.
Absolutely.
So what about the ethnic makeup of California seniors? You said that was going to change rather dramatically.
Yes.
What are the implications of that?
We find that according to the data, people from different racial ethnic groups tend to demand different services. And that you want to be a little careful saying that because they may have differential access to services as
Could you give me an example of that?
Just you may see that, for instance, African Americans use nursing homes at a higher rate than other subpopulations tend to, whereas Latinos tend to use nursing homes at a lower rate.
And any explanation as to why that is?
There's a lot of things that may be... there's a lot of different theories. One of them is that maybe African Americans, for whatever reason, have less access to home and community-based services. You can also, some people point to cultural differences, which is a
Latinos
very broad,
have extended families, perhaps.
Yes, and maybe more of a desire to try and remain in home as opposed to going into nursing homes. So it could be preferences among consumers. It could traditions among families. It could be information differences across urban versus rural communities. So that,
right.
I think it's a pretty complicated issue, but we do see in the data different rates of staying in home versus using nursing homes across different racial and ethnic groups.
Yeah.
You also see different marital rates across racial and ethnic groups.
Sure. So. Well, let's talk about the male-female makeup of California seniors. I mean, you indicated in an earlier segment that actually the portion of seniors that are male is actually going to go up a little bit. Any implications of that?
I think that there may be some. I don't think it's going to be nearly as much of a driver of changes as we would think from the racial and ethnic differences. In our data, we do find that men are slightly more likely to require some assistance with daily activities than women are.
You're saying men are needy?
But I think compared to the racial ethnic trends, this is a relatively small small difference.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the consequences of this changing family structures. I think that's going to be probably a pretty big issue. As the senior population have different family structures than they have traditionally in the past, what are the implications?
I agree with you that this is a really big issue. As we age, we are more likely to need help with daily activities, and this can be health care, but it can also be personal care or errands, going to the store. It can be chores like cooking and cleaning. And we know that family members are major providers of those types of services.
Right. So
as we project that there are going to be more seniors that are unmarried or have never had children, then they're, one, less likely to have family to provide that type of support. But we also in our data find that for a lot of reasons, people who say I've never been married are also a little more likely to require some support. So we think this is a population that the state needs to be particularly sort of aware of and focusing on, because they're more likely to need external support and it's more likely that they're going to come in contact with state programs.
The potentially worsening economic situation for California's growing senior population. We were talking earlier about the traditional pension plan that people could rely on. Those have gone the way of the dodo bird. I mean, very rare, except maybe in the public sector. Now more of this 401k situation. What are the consequences?
The biggest consequence that we highlight in this particular report is that the role of state programs is going to become increasingly important. Disabled and low-income seniors will qualify for Medi-Cal and other programs like in-home supportive services. But we're going to see a lot more seniors, and if an increasing number of them are qualifying as low-income, then a lot more people will be qualifying for these programs. And this is part of the reason that we emphasize that policymakers need to be following trends now and paying attention now, even though the bulk of the growth in the over 65 population is yet to come, because the more we plan and understand, the more efficiently we can use our resources.
You almost see that tidal wave kind of coming toward us and all the implications of that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you very much for talking about those implications of this growing senior population. Up next, what are the implications of the aging population on caring for mom and dad? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. California's growing senior population is going to be more ethnically and racially diverse than past generations and more likely to live alone. What kinds of support services are going to be needed? We're talking to Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California, who recently co-authored a report entitled Planning for California's Growing Senior Population. So the number of seniors facing difficulty caring for themselves, how much is that going to increase?
In our report, we look specifically at that question, and we project an 89% increase in the number of people who report needing some kind of support, and that's going up to just over 1 million people in the state.
And you think about that, 89%. Our population isn't going to increase 89%,
no.
In the next 15 years, yet this need is going to increase, so it's dramatically more than the increase in the population. So it puts it in context. What about estimating the number of people who are going to have difficulty caring for themselves? How did you come up with those estimates?
So what we did is the Department of Finance puts together wonderful projections.
And this is the State Department of Finance?
The California Department of Finance.
Okay.
And they put together wonderful projections on the age, racial, ethnic, and gender makeup of the population looking forward into the future. So we combine those populations with survey data, and we look at the effect of age and gender, but also your educational attainment, your marital status, whether or not you were born in the United States, and use those different factors to sort of predict the likelihood that you're going to require some care. Mm-hmm. So that 1 million people requiring care takes into account trends in racial, ethnic makeup of the population, and as well as the household composition of the population. So we try really hard to take into account how different the seniors are going to look in the future.
It's a guess, but it's an educated guess.
It's a very educated guess.
Yeah. I don't want to say the guess, because I know you look at a lot of variables and you make sure it's statistically relevant and all that, but you're projecting.
Absolutely. There are things that could change things significantly.
Okay, so I'm assuming that many, if not most, seniors are going to have, even those having some difficulty living on their own, still want to stay in their homes. Is that true?
I think it is true. I think that the question is what home means. I think that a more consistent statement is people want to have as much autonomy as they can and as many choices as they can, conditional on their health needs. For as long as they can.
Right.
Exactly. But I think that one thing you worry a lot about with the senior population is isolation, is getting removed from the community.
Right.
And a lot of people want to be engaged. They want to be either living with other seniors or living in a more in an environment where they're within walking distance of libraries or stores or other parts of the community?
You know, one of the things I find that's interesting when you talk to some seniors is sometimes, you know, they understand that. And senior living is pretty independent. But you hear this a lot. Oh, I don't want to be around old people. But, you know, you're older. And I think the mix, sometimes I think we kind of make the mistake of segregating old people, you know, into just with other old people. Mm-hmm. And really, maybe a mix with younger and old would be maybe a more vibrant community for some of these folks.
Absolutely.
And the kind of services we're talking about here are going to be, you know, if they're in home healthcare services, that's going to be required if they're living at home. Correct.
I think when in this particular report, we look at a survey question that says, do you require some support with some activity of daily living, which is a pretty low bar, and we don't really get into more serious levels of needs. It's just sort of a yes or no. And so in that respect, that 1 million number is picking up a pretty broad range of needs. It can be people with very high-level health needs, and it can be people who need help with more basic things like personal care, bathing, and dressing.
Well, let's talk about that, because there is a range of needs and services that go to those needs. One is assisted living. What kind of services do assisted living places provide?
Assisted living, you can think of it broadly as sort of a stepping stone between totally independent living in your home and the high-level health supports provided in nursing home care. So most assisted living facilities provide help with things like preparing meals, housekeeping, managing your medications. It's a community where you just don't have to do all of the things that come with home ownership or independent living.
Meals are provided,
exactly.
That kind of thing.
But they don't provide, as a rule, the kind of really high-level health care, 24-hour service that most nursing homes provide. There are some facilities that kind of cater to that spectrum and that provide both assisted living and nursing homes. But in general, when you think of assisted living, it's sort of a middle ground.
Okay, so you've kind of answered the next question I was going to have. What do nursing homes do? So there's a difference between assisted living and nursing homes.
Absolutely.
But let's talk about the numbers for nursing homes, the end of the continuum in terms of they need a lot of assistance. Are those numbers going up, down? Staying the same, what?
So, in general, since the 1990s, we've actually seen a steady decline in the rate of people using nursing homes and the number of people in nursing homes. A decline.
Does that correspond with more people wanting to stay in a home?
It's people wanting to stay in home. It's the increasing availability of things like home health aides or people coming to help you with enabling you to stay in your home.
When you're talking like that, it makes me think of grocery stores that will bring now the groceries to your home.
Absolutely.
And that didn't exist 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely, exactly. And another thing is I think that the the medical community also appreciates that outcomes can be better at home, so that there's a little more collaboration between medical providers and patients in trying to make that a reality.
We've only got about 30 seconds left in the segment. I want to ask you about the costs of nursing care versus in-home or assisted living. What are the cost differences?
It ranges tremendously. It depends a lot on what your needs are, where you live, what type of, I'll emphasize again, what your needs are. Do you need health supports or basically personal care supports? We cite one statistic in the paper, which is based off of the AARP's website that estimates costs, and they have an estimate. If you live in LA County, that it would cost a little over $70,000 for a semi-private room in a nursing home, okay. And more like $42,000 for a home health worker to come 40 hours a week. But there's a lot of ifs.
Right. But it's much less expensive to be in assisted living versus nursing.
Yes.
A nursing home.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's obviously a growing need for senior services. Up next, what should California policymakers be doing in anticipation of this senior boom? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Our guest is Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute of California, who co-authored a report on California's growing senior population. So the question here is, what should the state government do in anticipation of this future wave of seniors? So should California policymakers anticipate a demand for increased spending on programs like Medi-Cal or in-home supportive services?
Absolutely. Most seniors have the majority of their health care provided through Medicare, the federal program, but low-income and disabled seniors qualify for Medi-Cal, which both provides health services and pays for nursing home care and has other programs associated with it, like in-home supportive services, IHSS, which pays for people to bring support workers into their home to provide with personal care. They don't provide health services, but they do help people stay in their home.
And sometimes those could be family members.
Yes.
As well. And there's also discussion, a little bit off the track here, there's been a discussion in the legislature about whether those in-home supportive services employees should be allowed to unionize. And so that becomes a whole nother issue, because chances are if they unionize, they're going to have better pay and benefits. That will lead to a cost somewhere that someone's going to have to pay. So it's just there's a lot of things going on here that have policy implications. You know, you state in your report that it's helpful to think of two broad categories: where seniors live and what type of workers they're going to need for help. So let's start with where seniors live. You anticipate that most seniors are going to prefer to remain in their homes. We've talked about that. So how or who should pay for those services? If they want to stay in their home, they need in-home supportive services, who's going to pay for that?
For the most part, people are going to be responsible for paying for them on their own. If you aren't low income and don't qualify for Medi-Cal or some other government programs, this is something that you need to anticipate in case anything happens and you require some support. For people who do have low enough income to qualify for Medi-Cal, they can qualify for IHSS, and there are some other programs which will allow the state to subsidize bringing workers into your home. But I think another thing to keep in mind is that the vast majority of these services are provided in an unpaid way by family members. It's children supporting their parents and spouses supporting each other. It's a really big burden on family members of people who require some support. And so it's not a direct financial issue, but is more about time and resources.
Right, yeah. The caregiver is also a person that's in the equation. But I think people, when they're doing their financial budgets for retirement, they need to probably be thinking about they may need some support as they get older and maybe not thinking about that. So what about assisted living? Who pays for that?
For the most part, that's another thing where people are on their own. There are some very limited cases where this, where Medi-Cal will cover assisted living. There's a program called the Assisted Living Waiver, which subsidizes assisted living care for a pretty specific subset of Medi-Cal beneficiaries in a certain subset of counties.
But I think it's like 15 counties, like I read in your report, a very small group.
Very small group. And so for the most part, Medi-Cal will cover you if you need nursing home care, if your needs are intense enough that you require that level of assistance. But for assisted living, it's a
And just to put it in context, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure someone will correct me, but I think it's 58 counties in California,
yes.
So 15 out of 58 counties, a small subgroup. What about nursing home care? Who pays for that?
It depends a little on what your needs are. If you need long-term nursing home care sort of indefinitely, and you're low income and have you meet a number of other financial requirements, then Medi-Cal will cover it. If you're in a nursing home to recover from a medical event or a surgery, then Medicare will usually cover that if you are a Medicare beneficiary.
So Medi-Cal is a big player in the nursing home
Absolutely.
Situation.
Yes.
Can you briefly describe how Medi-Cal is funded? And also, when you talk about Medi-Cal, a lot of times you hear people talk about managed care. Can you kind of talk about those two issues for a moment?
So first, Medi-Cal is funded jointly between the federal government and the state government. In California, as a rule, it's a 50-50 split on Medi-Cal expenses between the state and the feds. Managed care is an effort that's going on across a lot of states, including California, to try and make care for people who have intense health needs more efficient, to coordinate across different providers, if it's different, if it's your nursing home director, your in-home workers, your doctors, the
So what they do, I think, in Medicare, if I understand you, correct me if I'm wrong, is with managed care, what they do is they say, you know, pay this amount per month and we'll take care of all the services, as opposed to a fee for service
plus
we're going to pay for each one. So the assumption is in the former, in under managed care, that the company, who's ever providing it, has an incentive to keep you healthy so they don't have to provide the care. And so it's more preventative as opposed to, you know, after the fact with, you know, fee for service.
Yes. And to
I hope I made that clear.
I mean, it's a complicated thing. It's also to help reduce duplication of services across different providers and to make sure that everybody involved in a certain patient's health is on the same page about what they're receiving, what they need, and trying to save money in doing it.
Let me ask you this. Workforce development. I mean, obviously, you talk about healthcare workers. That's going to be, the demand's going to be changing who we need there, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. So when we talk about an increasing number of seniors and an increasing number of people needing support, that's the demand for services. So we're going to need a commensurate increase in the supply of services as well. We're going to need people with pretty specific skill sets. A lot of them are going to be allied health workers who are, when you think of health workers, you think of doctors and nurses.
That's not what you're talking about here.
Here we're talking about home health workers, nursing aides, medical assistants, people who can be trained at a community college.
Right.
And so it's going to be important that the state think about the capacity of community colleges to train them.
Well, I want to thank Laurel Beck with the Nonpartisan Public Policy Institute for joining us. If you want to keep up with state and local politics, you can follow the Maddie Institute on Facebook, Twitter, or log on to our website at maddieinst.org. This is Mark Kepler for the Maddie Report. Thanks for joining us.
The views expressed in the Maddie Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Maddie Institute.
If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed on the Maddie Report, visit our website at maddieinstitute.org.
You're listening to the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
The impending senior boom in the Valley. What are the implications? We'll get perspectives from Jeremy Oliver, the program director for the Kern County Office of Aging and Adult Services, and Fresno State Gerontology Professor Helen Miltiades. Welcome back. So what are the implications for the impending senior boom on the Valley? We're going to ask Jeremy Oliver, program director with the Kern County Office of Aging and Adult Services. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you.
And Cal State University Fresno gerontology professor Helen Miltiades. Welcome, Professor.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So, Professor Miltiades, let me start with you first. We hear how much California's senior population is going to grow in the next 10 to 15 years, but what about the San Joaquin Valley? Will our senior population be growing at the same rate, a faster rate, a slower rate? What?
Well, currently across the entire state of California, about 13% of the population is over the age of 65. But here we have a range from a low of 9% in the San Joaquin Valley to about 13% in Madera County. Mm-hmm. So we have a little bit of catching up to do. The difference is that our valley is going to see an exponential rate of growth, faster than the rest of California.
Really? Why is that?
Well, I can tell you that it has several things. We do have affordable housing here.
That seems to be a big attraction. A lot of people in the Valley, in the Bay Area, come to the Valley because they can sell their house and then move here, and it's a lot less expensive.
Right. That's one of the reasons. Mm-hmm. The other reason is that people are aging in place here, and they can't afford to move or they don't want to move. People have family here, and there's, you know, cheaper retirement living just in general.
Well, that's actually, you know, think about it, that's actually even opportunity in some ways for the Valley. You know, if we do it right, if we build our communities correctly, we can make it even a place that seniors want to live. Great weather for the most part and cheap housing. I don't know. Jeremy, let me ask you, you talk about places like Kern County. What is your senior population? Is it growing faster or the same rate as the rest of the state?
You know, our projections seem to indicate that we'll grow a little bit faster than the state, but definitely in line with the valley overall. I think we saw that Kings and Madera counties tend to be projected the highest within the next by 2020, and so we're right within the regular scopes.
You know, it's interesting. Increasingly, it seems like the South Valley is becoming almost like a bedroom community to Los Angeles. And if and when high-speed rail happens, and I don't want to get into that whole topic, that's a whole other conversation, but if and when that happens, I would think that Bakersfield and Kern County is just going to explode in terms of growth. And so you'd probably see even more.
Exactly. We're seeing some of the projections that they're talking about. We're going to hit our million-plus population within the next, 4 or 5 years out. And it seems like we're becoming more and more of a suburb of the Los Angeles type of area, especially if that high-speed rail comes into play.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where Bakersfield is no longer, you know, the smaller city to Fresno. It's about the same size, or getting to be the same size. So, Professor Miltiades, let me ask you this. I assume the Valley senior population is going to be even more ethnically diverse than the state's senior population as a whole. Is that true, number one? And number two, what are the implications?
Well, we do have a very diverse, culturally diverse population here. The Hispanics are going to be our fastest growing group. The implications with those, with that is that they have fewer retirement resources, economically speaking.
So that means pensions and things like that.
Yes.
There's not a lot of money set aside.
Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot of life savings. They're more likely to be renters. They have health challenges, more health challenges. Mm-hmm. Diabetes is huge, heart disease, stroke, and they have limited access to healthcare resources, perhaps.
So more medical issues, less money. This is not sounding very good.
No, it's not.
So there are some implications, and some of those costs are going to be shifted to counties and cities, I assume, and some of the social services will have to be provided to some of those people as they age.
Yes, some of it does come out of Medi-Cal,
mm-hmm.
But sort of the issue is that sometimes they might be afraid to access those resources just due to their citizenship status as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that in itself is an issue. In general, we're going to need more bilingual service providers.
Yeah, that was something that was mentioned in an earlier segment of the show that there is going to be this real need for people that can not just speak in different languages, but also be aware of the different customs and whatnot of different cultures that they'll be dealing with.
Right. And we also need, I would say, rural outreach, because not everyone lives in the city center. And we have just a huge rural population as well.
And that's another really, really excellent point. I think sometimes when people think of California, we think of, San Francisco, Los Angeles, the big cities, and you don't think of, Kerman and Firebaugh and, Delano and things like that.
So transportation becomes a huge issue. Right. What do you do if, you're over 80 years old, you have cognitive decline, and you're home alone, and you have to go to the doctor? Who's going to take you there?
Right. Or even something as simple as getting food or getting your right. medications and whatnot. If you have right. to drive, but you're no longer really able to drive, that becomes an issue.
Right. And you might rely on family members, and there's always the assumption sometimes that family is there for you, and oftentimes family is not.
Yeah. Jeremy, we talked in an earlier segment about the changing family structure among seniors in the state generally, more single, divorced, and those that have never had children. But that doesn't appear to be the trend necessarily here in the Valley. We seem to have more seniors living with family members than in other places in the state. What are the implications regarding services provided by counties here in the Valley?
In general, counties have to be prepared to provide the services where the person resides, and definitely target the needs of each of their respective communities. I know within Kern, we see a mix of both families that are residing together and seniors that are estranged from families or lacking any familial supports. What we do for those is we try and target more activities for our seniors, and we utilize our senior centers as being kind of a surrogate base for people to come together and work together and hopefully improve overall their opportunities. We've also developed some volunteer outreach programs, which go out into partnerships with our mental health services, reach out to our isolated seniors and typically those in our more remote areas.
Yeah. I was doing some research for this, and I found that in the state, of the 58 counties in California, the Valley has three counties in the top four. Madera County is number one with seniors living with their family. Merced County is number three in the state with seniors living with their families, and Tulare County is number four. That trend is very different here in the Valley as opposed to the state generally. Professor Miltiades, let me ask you this. What about the economic – you talked earlier about the economic conditions of seniors in the Valley. With so few people getting traditional pensions these days and so little money being set aside, by most people for their 401k, there's this issue of income inequality and whether it's going to now – be even more stark among seniors than it is around, as opposed to the general population. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's a very important issue to discuss, and the answer is very shocking. Our seniors live on sort of modest incomes. They're actually the lowest in the entire state of California. We've got, 60% that are dependent primarily on Social Security, and that the average
primarily dependent on Social Security.
Right. And the average benefit rate is $1,200 a month. So how are you going to live on $1,200 a month?
About $13,000 a year as your primary source of retirement income.
Right. That's not a lot of money. And only about 40% have some type of income that is above and beyond Social Security. So we have the highest level of senior poverty, one out of three of our seniors are living in poverty. And what does this mean? That they can't find safe, secure, affordable, reasonable housing. They have difficulty paying for out-of-pocket medical expenses, over-the-counter expenses, difficulties with transportation, and even difficulties being able to afford like basic necessities such as food. So it's a huge issue for seniors.
And again, if they need help, then there's a social services component that the county then have to come in and take care of those issues.
That's right. And some seniors don't apply for the benefits that they are eligible for.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, let me ask you this. How do you see that economic situation impacting the services that you provide? Are you seeing the need to provide more social services or other things like just protections against swindling seniors out of their life savings? You hear that a lot about that.
Yeah, actually, it's targeting both those things that we generally, as kind of stated, the less a person has to rely on, the higher the need for the social services to come in and help augment support. we do see kind of a shift in mindsets too. Some of the seniors are reluctant to take any government aid or any government supports, whereas the newer generation may be more inclined to say, I'm entitled to that. I want to receive a service. You have a duty to provide a service to us. In terms of the adult protective services, that's where we tend to do the education to the community about what types of things are out there that are targeting seniors, and the amount of things that are out there for folks to access seniors is astounding when you look at the awareness, the information that's floating out there that's accessible to all. And that's being used by a lot of swindlers to go in there and target them and access their funds. So we are seeing a need to go out and educate and really get our folks informed of what they can do to prevent themselves from being targets.
Yeah, you do hear that a lot, and I think that every family member should be talking to their parents or their loved ones that are older and warning them about all these scams that are out there and taking advantage of people, which is just, you think about it, it's so sad that people save their entire lives and then they're swindled out of their money. It's an incredibly sad situation. But first, Miltiades, let me ask you about the growth of the Valley senior population in the coming years seems to will probably be impacting employment opportunities. What kinds of services and jobs are going to see an increase in demand in the future because of this increase in senior population?
Well, obviously, occupations that serve the senior population with a huge emphasis in the health-related occupations and the allied health fields. So if you take a look at the projections, what we're seeing is that we will have increased need for registered nurses, CNAs, nursing aides, people who work in skilled nursing facilities, assisted living, home health aides. These are people who go out into someone's home and they provide health-related services.
Because a lot of seniors really want to age in place, right? They want to stay at home if they can.
Who wouldn't?
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
That's very true. Right.
So those are people who go at home, and they have home care aides, and they go and do housekeeping services. That in itself is going to see a growth. What's really concerning is that we have fewer hospital beds and physicians.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to need an increase, I believe, in hospital beds and also physicians. And we also see a need for what they call social managers, community relations, activities directors, people who serve the assisted living industry.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ask me something else?
No, I'm going to ask you something else. You mentioned it because it made me think of you're talking about aging in place. And I'm wondering what the implications are, the policy implications for living in place. And we were talking off air a little bit about some communities are actually trying to design their communities in a way that makes it easier for seniors. So in other words, everything is that they need is within a walkable distance. So they can go to the food store, the drug store, and that's literally the way they're designing communities. Do you see that happening as the Valley seems to be very car-centric? You seem to have to drive everywhere for anything. And that model is not going to really work for people in their 80s. So
no.
Do you think city planners should start to be thinking about the needs of seniors and their desire to age in place when they're designing communities?
I think the question should be is where are the seniors living now? So designing a city center, if seniors aren't really already living there, that might not be the best way to go. But in general, having safer neighborhoods, I think that's important. Sidewalks, good lighting, having a grocery store nearby, all of that is good, not just for seniors, but also for anyone who's living in that particular community.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's important. My emphasis would be on trying to create services that help older adults stay in their home and also making some of these services more affordable. So, for example, if you're having private pay home care, that could run $30 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a middle-income older adult, you might not be able to afford that, or you might see that your assets are being depleted rather rapidly.
Right.
So some cost-sharing might be in order.
Right. So perhaps you're thinking more money from the state or something to help supplement some people to have in-home supportive services to allow them to age in place, stay at home.
And you're looking at things such as home maintenance as well. So if an older adult is in a home, they still have issues with home repair, home maintenance, home care.
Well, one of the issues too, I think, when you're thinking about the senior issue is as people age, you could put them, they could go to assisted living or something like that, or stay at home. And the research that I've seen, it's much less expensive to allow them to age in place at home, and they actually want it. So it's a double win if you can make that happen. You know, Jeremy, I want to ask you, what are the implications for services that you provide? You know, this idea that people want to age in place. Do you see you changing the kinds of types of services you're providing to allow that to happen?
You know, you hit the nail right on the head with regards to the savings of cost when a person is able to stay in their home, and that is a key emphasis of almost all of our programs, is trying to make sure people are staying in their homes for as long as possible. The cost of going into those higher levels of care do just add up quickly once they move away from their own primary home. In terms of what we will encounter for us is, yes, we'll see an expansion, and you touched on in-home support services and transportation. I think both of those are going to be increased costs that we're going to have to look towards an expansion of our programs to meet those needs.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what services currently exist for seniors? More than you might realize. That conversation in a moment. This is the Mattie Report, Valley Views Edition.
You're listening to the Mattie Report, Valley Views Edition, on KMJ.
Welcome back. We're talking to Fresno State Gerontology Professor Helen Miltiadis and Jeremy Oliver with the Kern County Office of Aging and Adult Services about the Valley's senior population. I want to turn our attention to the services that are available to Valley seniors. And Jeremy, let me start with you. Kern County, like most Valley counties, offers a wide array of services for seniors. So what are the kinds of services that you offer at the Kern County Office of Aging and Adult Services?
Sure. Through our office, we offer health insurance, counseling, and advocacy program, also known as HICAP. It is there to, kind of like it describes, help people with their health insurance issues, advocate for them about issues with billing or payments.
Well, I bet that's a big issue.
It is an ongoing struggle, and if people aren't – that's another targeted area for scams, is billing your insurance for services that you either didn't need or didn't want. October 15th to December 7th is actually our open enrollment period for Medicare, so it's a prime time to reach out to the HICAP programs to talk to them about what insurance you want to switch your Medicare prescription plan to. It's basically a program that doesn't, you know, charge for any of this. It's free, so it's an opportunity to gather the most important information about who you want to change your prescription plan to in this open time frame.
What about this? I read something about a SNAP Ed program. What's the SNAP Ed Healthy Choices program?
Well, sure. Our SNAP Education is a grant where you do training opportunities to seniors about the different healthy ideas or healthy ways of eating food, and how that can help improve their quality of life and how it can help them be a lot more mobile. We offer, along with the SNAP education, we offer a lot of meals through our senior centers, as well as a Meals on Wheels program. So that goes and provides a meal to one person at their home Monday through Friday.
You know, that's really, really important. I would brag on my mom a little bit here. You know, she's 87 years old, and she'll go out and walk 3 miles a day, you know, three times a week. I think one of the reasons she's so healthy is that she does that. She eats right and she exercises. I think it's so important to maintain a healthy lifestyle as you age. What about – you also have something called Adult Protective Services. What are those?
Sure. Adult Protective Services is a program that's designed to help folks who might be targeted or have been targeted for some type of abuse. It could be financial abuse, neglect. Self-neglect even, so a person that you feel may not be protecting themselves or keeping themselves very safe any longer, they can send in a report for Adult Protective Services. It can be anonymous unless you're a mandated reporter. Mandated reporters are usually in protected job classifications, so in the course of their duties, they see an abusive situation, and they put in a report to our office.
That's a way to protect
and
seniors.
Exactly. And then APS goes out and investigates that issue.
Let me ask you one last thing. We were talking earlier about in-home supportive services. Do you provide those as well to seniors?
Yes. In-home support services is run through our program as well here at Kern County Aging Adult Services. It is a Medi-Cal program, so a person does have to be on Medi-Cal, and it targets those that are at risk of going into those higher levels of care. It's a prime program for keeping people at their home as long as possible.
So things like house cleaning, grocery shopping, bathing, those accompanying them to medical appointments, those are the kinds of things that these folks do?
Exactly. So the non-medical issues, the things that keep you active in your home, so the right meal preparation, changing of clothing, bathing, all those things that are not medical in nature.
And there's also a lot of actually fun things that seniors can do. And I know that the university has a lot of things. Fresno State has a lot of things for seniors. So, Professor Miltiadis, can you talk a little bit about what the university offers, what opportunities they offer for seniors?
Well, I think our best-known program that is offered is the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and that is for people who are over the age of 50. And the primary purpose is just to have a great learning experience and to sort of enrich the seniors' lives.
But they talk to professors, give talks about different
yes.
topics, and hopefully they're interesting
yes,
topics.
They are interesting topics. I believe they even have a wine tasting over in the...
I'm signing up for that one right now.
And they have workshops. They have field trips. It's just a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. I was mentioning my mom earlier. She lives in San Diego, and she goes to the University of California San Diego program, OSHA program, and she just raves about it. It's just really enriching. So she's learning about Shakespeare or early Christianity or whatever the topic is and really enjoying it. So I think that's a nice thing that universities offer. And we have obviously not just Cal State Fresno, but we also have Cal State Bakersfield. We have Cal State Stanislaus. UC Merced, I'm sure all of them offer those kinds of programs. Anything else that Fresno State offers for seniors?
Well, one thing that is unique is the Gait and Balance Clinic. It's a fall prevention clinic, and they will actually assess seniors for their fall risk, and they will design a program, strength-based strength training program exercises to actually increase or reduce the risk of falls, and that's got some evidence and research behind it. So
that sounds really interesting. Another issue dealing with my mom, and the whole topic was falling, and that's right. A big issue for seniors. And if you can just maintain your gait and your balance, that's a really big issue in terms of medical costs and quality of life. So another thing that the university offers for folks, that's kind of neat. I didn't know about that.
That's a good thing, because people who are afraid of falling. The fear of falling actually keeps people inside the home and actually decreases their social activities.
Social and physical activities,
right,
probably.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's very important.
That's excellent. So let me ask you this. We're thinking about what can we do to make the lives of our booming senior population better. So maybe I'll start with you, if it's okay, Professor Miltiadis. Your recommendations, what should we do moving forward to help address some of this impending senior boom here in the Valley?
I think the first thing is awareness, so talking about it is very important. I'm actually beginning to assess what our seniors' needs are and looking around and saying, how can we support them and who is best to do it? So is it, a city planner? Is it supporting families? Is it increasing social services? But number one goal of most seniors is to be able to age in place. How can we help families do that? How can we help families who maybe they're taking care of young children and then they're taking care of older parents? What can we do to actually support them? And then for those seniors who maybe do have to move into assisted living, is there a place where it's affordable?
Right.
Is there a place where it's actually reasonable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bring up a lot of issues. One of the things I think you're mentioning when you started off your very first comment is just being aware of the problem. I think sometimes, and then seniors, particularly those who don't get out, they right. become invisible to us, right? And so right. we don't think of those problems. But increasingly, as this population ages, we're all going to be dealing with 87-year-old moms, hopefully, that are in good health, but have issues that you need to assist them with. So, Jeremy, let me ask you. You're down in Kern County. What kinds of things would you like to see happen to make address some of these issues for this impending senior boom that the Valley is going to experience, and particularly like places like Kern County is going to experience?
Sure. What I tend to emphasize a lot is early planning. So looking at the person themselves, what are they wanting to have, not only for retirement, but in the event of a medical emergency happening to them, who are they going to designate as the person to make decisions for them? We find a lot of people out there who are unrepresented. They don't have anybody, and so it creates this big gaping hole when they are not able to answer those questions when they're in for a medical treatment issue or they have a decline in their cognitive abilities. And so the importance of really creating those medical decision documents, an advanced health care directive, or as well as a power of attorney, designating who it is and making sure it's a trustworthy person as well, as someone that's going to be there and can actually carry out your wishes as you really want them to be.
Did you talk to doctors about that? I mean, it would seem that, that doctors would be kind of on the front lines talking to their patients saying, hey, you need an advanced health care directive or you need power of attorney for health care purposes.
Most doctors are actually kind of scared to have that decision about end-of-life discussions, but there are forms out there that are directed to help doctors. There's a PULSE form, or physician's order for life-sustaining treatment, that can be filled out with you or in your doctor, and it basically is kind of what you want to have happen should you go into the hospital and not be able to make decisions for yourself.
Yeah, there's also, of course, now the issue, California recently passed this right to die legislation,
right.
And so there's an issue there about, you know, what do you do to make sure that that law is implemented appropriately and that people aren't taking advantage of that? And any comments on that, Professor Miltiadis, about that new law? Do you see new issues emerging as a result of that right to die legislation?
I'm pretty sure we're going to see issues, but probably with younger persons rather than older persons.
Mm-hmm. When the Oregon experience has been, you know, they've had that law for about 17, 18 years, and they really have not seen some of the concerns that some of the opponents of that law had, at least in Oregon that hasn't emerged. Jeremy, do you got any issues, any concerns about that new law that was passed? Are you hearing things?
We've been watching the End-of-Life Options Act and just trying to watch out for what might come our way. The biggest question we have, or biggest concerns, would be in the event of a person that has somebody else witnessing their passing and taking those drugs, and the question could arise, you know, did they actually administer themselves or did somebody else aid them in that process?
Right. That's the key part of that law. They have to do it themselves.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to thank, interesting discussion. I want to thank both of our guests, Fresno State Gerontology Professor Helen Miltiadis and Jeremy Oliver with the Kern County Office of Aging and Adult Services. Thanks both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Matty Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.